From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. We're going to hear now about a marriage crisis in the Arab world. Across the region, 50% of men between the ages of 25 and 29 are not married. Women are being forced to delay marriage, too. The main reason is money. Tying the knot is increasingly expensive at a time when youth unemployment is at an all-time high. In some Arab countries, more than half of those unemployed are under the age of 30. In Egypt, the marriage crisis is widely discussed, studied, and worried about. During this holy month of Ramadan, a new television sitcom called I Want to Get Married is expected to be the hit of the season. It began as a popular blog, then a best-selling book, and now it's a TV series tackling the sometimes frenzied search for a suitable mate. NPR's Deborah Amos reports from Cairo.
As almost every American singleton knows, this TV theme opened another anxious chapter on unmarried life. In Egypt, the series I Want to Get Married plays on a similar theme. The opening lines, I am very unlucky. I'm the only girl that hasn't gotten married. Written by Ghana Abdul Al. She's Carrie Bradshaw in a headscarf. A witty observer of Egypt's matchmaking nightmares and the relentless family pressure to get married.
Do you know Sex and the City, the American one?
Yeah, actually, some people call my show like Sex and the City, but just without the sex. So it's just the city.
Abdul Al writes about the hazards of being single in a conservative Muslim society where marriage is the only door to respect and especially for women, sexual activity. She started her blog after completing a pharmacy degree. When, she says, the marriage clock started ticking.
Yes, the problem starts just after we graduate college. And it goes on until you're 30, and 30 is like the death sentence for single women, especially in my hometown, because it's small and conservative. And when you are 30, it's like you're having like this big label of like failure or pathetic or ugly or whatever.
Now 31, Abdul Al has considered dozens of unsuitable suitors. The funniest sitcom scenes come from her own experience.
Action!
She skewers the Egyptian custom known as living room marriage, poking fun at this awkward courtship ritual that requires a decision on a life partner after a chat in the family living room, chaperoned by nervous parents who just want it all to work out.
And sometimes when you ask for more time, he will be offended. He will think, like, why do you need any more time? Can't you see I'm perfect? Can't you see I'm great? What else do you need? I'm a man, I have an apartment, and I have a job. How can you say no?
For those who say yes, getting hitched is getting more expensive. There's the traditional wedding party, loud and expensive, but that's only a small part of the cost. American professor Diane Singerman, who studies the economics of Egyptian marriage, says a housing crisis is driving prices out of reach at a time when many Egyptian men can't find a job, especially among the college-educated. For the poor, marriage can cost 15 times an annual income, because by custom and religious traditions across all classes, everything, including housing, must be bought and paid for before the couple say, I do.
Everything is new. All the clothes are new, all the spices are new, the furniture is new, the fans are new. If you're richer, the satellite TV or the automobiles are new. It's a huge amount of money.
This means weddings are often delayed for years. And in a culture that equates marriage with adulthood, Singerman calls the social cost for the young generation waithood.
They are stuck in this period of not being children, not being adolescents, and they don't necessarily consider themselves adults. And at the same time, almost everybody, if they are not married, they're living at home with their families.
Abdul Al's story is being told on the small screen. But in Cairo, a new movie about marriage is already drawing large crowds. It boldly tackles the most delicate issue for couples pushing the wedding date into their late 20s and 30s. And that issue is sex.
I realize that all of you haven't got married.
This new movie drama called Two Girls from Egypt tells the story of the marriage woes of professional women, 30-something doctors who explain to an English-speaking visitor what waiting means for them.
Being an unmarried Arabic woman is being a virgin by default.
No.
Yes, I'm still a virgin, and all of the girls are virgins as well.
And no kissing?
The audience laughs too. An acknowledgement that social and religious pressures forbid sex before marriage, says sociologist Gadot Barsoom. But there's a reason it's called the marriage crisis.
Well, sex is an important issue. You can't downplay that. But it's this whole issue of completeness. You're not a complete person unless you're married. Achieving who you are is complete only when you're married. It's so different from the West.
For Egypt's young generation, there's a conflict between reality and tradition, says historian Hanan Khaloussi. She teaches a course on the marriage crisis. It's a lens, she says, to look at rapid social change. The new role of women, more educated, more independent, a traditional society that now embraces the materialism of the West, and the frustration of the young, angry at the government for an economy that can't keep up with their demands. Khaloussi hopes the new sitcom, I Wanna Get Married, will spark a national discussion.
I predict it's going to be a huge hit, without a doubt. And it will invite controversy and discussion and debate, and I think that's what the exciting part of this is, because there's a real problem with the way we get married in this country.
Ghada Abdel-Al's approach is to make this serious problem funny, which has given her writing wide appeal. She's famous now, but she still lives at home. And has all this fame finally paid off?
Is it easier for you to get married?
No, it's much harder because everyone is so afraid to, you know, approach me because they are frightened to find their stories in the next book.
Her new book is in English. A translated version of I Wanna Get Married will be published in the fall. Deborah Amos, NPR News.
All Things Considered is a production of NPR News, which is solely responsible for its content. You can connect with NPR and your favorite member station, wherever you are. Get the NPR app for your mobile device. You can also lean back and enjoy NPR.org, optimized for the iPad. This is NPR.
A new poll shows that a growing number of Americans believe that President Obama is a Muslim, and the numbers who say correctly that he is Christian are declining. That is a shift from last year. Now more than 40% tell pollsters they don't know what the president's religion is. This comes from the Pew Research Center for the People in the Press, which talked to 3,000 people in this survey. The survey was taken before the argument you just heard Don Gagne discussing really heated up between July 21st and August 5th. Joining us to talk about the poll is the president of the Pew Research Center, Andrew Cohut. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Linda.
President Obama calls himself a Christian, Andy. We all remember the controversy over his pastor in Chicago during the campaign. But the number of people who identify him as Christian is declining from about half to about a third. Why?
Well, the percentage of people saying, I don't know what religion President Obama is, increased from about a third, 34%, to 43%. And I think this has to do with the fact that religion is not a prominent part of Barack Obama's persona. Now, I think the increase with respect to the number who think he's a Muslim has to do with something else. I think that's the intensification of negative views about him among his critics. All of the shift, all of the increased mention of him as a Muslim basically comes from people who disapprove of him.
So what can you, does that mean politics, Republican politics, conservative politics, can you identify them?
Well, it's largely Republican, it's largely conservative, and as I said, overwhelmingly people who don't like Barack Obama. It's part of, I think, of a mindset of people who are personally critical of Obama, saying, well, you know, he's not like us. You know, there's this whole birther thing that goes on and on. In any event, the real critical issue from the perspective of the broad public is that this falling recognition of what his religion is. Even Democrats are less of the view that he's a Christian. That declined from 55% to 44%, and more of a view that, hey, I don't know what religion the president is, from 32% to 41% over the course of a year. And a majority of people say a president having strong religious faith is important to them. They don't want a president who governs by religion, but they see it as an important value.
Now, certainly people were in no doubt about George Bush's religious faith or Jimmy Carter's religious faith. We've had presidents who make a big point of it, and then we've had other presidents, Ronald Reagan comes immediately to mind, who did not make a big point of going to church all the time.
Yeah, and that may be in part Obama's problem here with respect to what his religion is. I mean, President Bush set such a high bar in terms of his religiosity that looking at Obama and saying, wow, he's not very religious, the point of reference was President Bush, who was very religious. So there's that.
Do you think that this public attitude plays into the current controversy over building the Islamic Center? Do you think that it leads the president's opponents to think that this might be potent political ground for them?
Well, I don't know whether it plays in the minds of the public, whether it plays, I don't want to speculate whether it plays into this controversy, but it certainly is grist for the mill of those who are politicking on the president and looking forward to the midterm elections.
Andrew Kohut, president of the Pew Research Center, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel. Many opponents of the planned mosque in New York near Ground Zero argue that an Islamic center is fine, just not there. But in other parts of the country, people are saying not here either. Outside Nashville, the proposed mosque has divided the community. For member station WPLN, Blake Farmer has the story.
Police make their presence known as hundreds of marchers parade around the town square in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. They carry signs that read, "Enough is enough," and "Stop terrorism."
Islam is not a religion!
Another woman yells out, "Have you forgotten the Twin Towers?" What's got these people so upset is a proposal to build what would eventually be a 52,000-square-foot Islamic center, complete with worship space, a cafe, and even a pool. There's already a small, inconspicuous mosque hidden in a complex of office suites behind a quick lube. But the congregation has outgrown the space. The leader of the opposition has tried stopping construction with environmental and traffic concerns, but that's not what's on the mind of most who are rallying against the mosque, like Ben Fletcher.
We're Christians, and this religion represents people that are against Christians. I mean, that's something that we need to look at, you know, because you're going to have a lot of trouble down the line.
Fletcher says he doesn't know exactly what trouble looks like, but he and others worry about terrorist links and Muslims wanting to impose Sharia law.
All of a sudden now, you know, there's a movement against Islam and Muslim.
Saleh Spinati is an engineering professor from Syria and a leader of the growing Muslim congregation. He's lived in Tennessee 3 decades, but says he's never seen this level of Islamophobia.
We did not see that immediately after 9/11. And all of a sudden now, it is part of politics, and it's like, you know, I can get more votes if I can bash Islam more and Muslim more.
The mosque debate has played out in state politics. The lieutenant governor had to back away from campaign statements suggesting Islam might be a cult. A candidate for Congress who was upfront about her suspicions of Muslims nearly won the Republican primary this month. But in Murfreesboro, there is also a healthy amount of support for the mosque, even among non-Muslims. In fact, many are Christians themselves, like Allison Belt.
Anyone who has a religion that falls within the boundaries of our laws, such as the Muslim community here, should have access to a place to worship. they need more room, they need more space. I went to an open house at their place 2 weeks ago. It is crowded and hot.
At least one opponent is trying to find out more about Islam. Tansy Webb showed up at the existing mosque this week. She said she wants to look its leaders in the eye and get some questions answered. Webb arrives just before the afternoon call to prayer and is invited in.
Is that okay? And I behave. I'm actually very nice.
Webb slips off her shoes and watches from the back.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
After seeing prayers, Webb talks with the imam. She tells him she's afraid following the Quran to the letter makes for extremists and terrorists. Afterward, she says the meeting didn't convince her otherwise.
It did not put my mind at ease at all, but I tried to come in with a very open mind. I did not come in thinking this group is evil. My main thing is safety, safety, safety.
That's safety from violent extremism, she says. Webb says she has a long way to go before she can be comfortable with a big Islamic center, whether it's going to be next door or in New York City. For NPR News, I'm Blake Farmer in Nashville.
In the debate over the mosque in New York, one voice has recently been silent, that of Faisal Abdul Rauf. He is the imam behind the mosque. Rauf has been traveling outside the country and not speaking to the media. NPR's Jamie Tarabay reports that in his absence, opponents are using past statements to criticize his plans.
Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf already has a mosque in Lower Manhattan. Masjid al-Farah is about 12 blocks from Ground Zero, and for 15 years the mosque has struggled to accommodate people in its small prayer space. When NPR interviewed Imam Rauf earlier this year about his plans for the new building, he said having a Muslim presence so close to the site lets him reach out to non-Muslims and counter the terrorist ideology.
By participating in lectures, by having sports together, this is how people bond across the religious divides. And that has been a very important factor in bridging relationships between the Christian and other Abrahamic faith traditions.
Rauf practices Sufism, the mystical form of Islam. Since coming to America more than 20 years ago, he's worked in Muslim outreach, founded interfaith organizations, and written books on Islam in contemporary Western society. People who support him, like Dalia Mahmoud from the Muslim Public Affairs Council, say he's also a New Yorker and strongly invested in the city.
I would say he's dedicated 95% of his life to trying to foster peace and understanding between different groups.
But those who doubt Rauf's intentions point to his own words during a 60-minute interview shortly after the September 11 attacks. He told the late Ed Bradley that American foreign policies are strongly criticized in the Muslim world.
I wouldn't say that the United States deserved what happened, but the United States policies were an accessory to the crime that happened.
Okay. You say that we're an accessory?
Yes.
How?
Because we have been an accessory to a lot of innocent lives dying in the world. In fact, in the most direct sense, Osama bin Laden is made in the USA.
It's that quote that has repeatedly come up in this debate. Cliff May is a conservative commentator who heads the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies.
You either do or do not believe that whatever grievances one has, it is wrong to express them by murdering other people's children. If you agree that's wrong, you're against terrorism. If you say, well, not in all cases, then whatever else you can say about yourself, you're not clearly, unequivocally opposed to terrorism.
May criticizes Rauf for refusing to say whether he believes the Palestinian group Hamas is a terrorist organization. And like many others, he wants assurances that money for the $100 million project isn't coming from groups with ties to terrorism. People like Reza Aslan, a Muslim author and scholar, say Rauf's attempts to explain terrorist actions are not the same as supporting them. Aslan says government officials do the same thing.
I know this not only because of my own personal interaction with counterterrorism officials, with military officials, and with officials in the CIA and in the White House and in the State Department. I know this because I read the 9/11 report. And the 9/11 Commission report says the exact same thing.
Right now, Rauf is traveling in Malaysia, but he'll soon embark on a speaking tour to the Middle East on behalf of the U.S. government, something he also did during the Bush administration. The State Department says Rauf will speak about religious tolerance and what life is like as a practicing Muslim in America. Jamie Tarabay, NPR News.
This is NPR.